All right, that means that we are recording.
Thanks, Jared.
You're welcome.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Imago Think Tank. Today is May 23rd, 2012, and this is Dr. Tammy Nelson. And today we have a great guest that's going to talk today, Dr. Judy Hollis. And Judy is a guest on Dr. Oz, which is where you may have heard her name. She's also been on CNN, Extra, Inside Edition, Oprah, Sally, Lisa. She's been all over the place. She's a licensed family therapist, and she has her own. She's maintained her own 70-pound weight loss. So we're going to talk about her new book and some of her past books. She's taught at universities, hospitals, and community agencies, including the U.S. Navy's treatment programs, the FBI, Betty Ford Center, Hazleton, Omega, and Esalen. And Judy works in the addiction field in family therapy and eating disorders. And she has written a lot for places like Shape, Teen, Self, Cosmo, Elle. And she's the author of a national bestseller you may have read or recall, Fat is a Family Affair. And she works with this idea of the obesity epidemic. And she's written a new book, which is a part memoir. And so it's part how-to, to offer inspiration to anyone struggling with weight loss and management. And I like that she says it's written by someone who's been there, done that. 70-pound weight loss is quite impressive. Her new book is called...
Keeping It Off is what's great.
And I want to hear all about that. Her new book is called From Bagels to Buddha, How I Found My Soul and Lost My Fat. And we're going to make sure that we tell you all about how to find the book and how to order it. It's actually a brand new book, comes out June 1st, but you can get it this week on Amazon by pre-order. And she's also the author of another book called Hot and Heavy. We're going to talk a little bit about that as well. But I just want to welcome you, Judy, and thank you so much for being here on the Imago Think Tank to talk to us, couple therapists.
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity, and looking forward.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that you're here. So I know that you... you know, you've written these books, you've been focusing sort of on the addiction field and on eating disorders, and do you want to share with us a little bit about sort of your history and how you got from there to this book?
Well, sure, why not? Yeah, you know, I worked in the addiction field while I myself was extremely obese, and all of my colleagues said, you know, you've always been that way, you're always going to be that way, there's no help for people like you. And here we were sending alcoholics to AA, and they were getting better, and their lives were shaping up. And I said, there's nothing like that for me. And here I was living in Los Angeles, which was the birthplace of Overeaters Anonymous, but had never heard of it. And one day I passed a store window, and I saw a horribly fat woman in the window. Then I saw she was wearing the same dress that I was. And then it hit me that that was me. And I was so mortified, and as it turns out, I was doing a seminar, and a woman in this seminar, I asked people to tell things they liked about themselves, and this woman said she had just lost 30 pounds at Overeaters Anonymous. So I sneaked up to her after the meeting because I didn't want anyone to know I was fat, and well, I figured, you know, maybe my moo-moo shifted and they might see a role here, but... you know, I was an existential therapist, and I felt it was my existential decision to be fat, and as soon as I decided, I would lose the weight. But yeah, all that kind of intellectual stuff. Well, P.S., as a result of my getting my own recovery in order, I started the nation's first eating disorder unit, and based on that, wrote my experiences and what was needed for families, and I wrote Fat as a Family Affair. And that launched a lot of appearances on Oprah and all the major media and got that word out. But you know what's really funny is after all these many years, still, people keep talking about diet and exercise, diet and exercise, diet and exercise. Well, yes, and if they don't deal with these underlying issues that we're talking about, then just like me, they'll gain and lose thousands of pounds. So after that book, I saw that the... that was the family dynamics. Then the most intimate relationship that really had to be looked at was the mother-daughter relationship. And that created the book Fat and Furious. In the meantime, I was developing treatment centers around the country, and the Fat and Furious was really addressing the issue that daughters were binging and purging their mother's disowned pain and anger. And
beautiful line.
Was quite, yeah, yeah. And
can you just say that line again? Because that's just such a brilliant insight, right?
Yeah.
There.
And I'm talking too fast. Let me slow down. Daughters are binging and purging their mother's disowned pain and anger. So this is mother's disowned pain. If mother's in touch with her pain, it's probably not as bad. But you see, that brings a lot of more serious, deeper issues to the table that we need to discuss. So a lot of people come into treatment and just need to deal with mother-daughter issues. And I do a lot of workshops just on mothers and daughters. In fact, in treatment, we often say, if it's not one thing, it's your mother. And this is... And this is not to blame your mother at all, because when we do these workshops, I ask mothers to attend as a daughter. You know, they're working on healing their relationship with their mother, whether she's alive or not. But it's about power. If you think about it, food is what gives us power. And if we're conflicted in that area, then we turn to other substances to look at how to get that power. And we... In the case of overeaters, we eat inappropriately. So this went on to then looking at, okay, so, and a lot of that book was about the Jungian concept of individuation and separation. How do you grow up and leave home? How do you let your mother stay in her suffering and you walk into the sunlight? How, basically, how do you grow up and leave home and get your own fights and your own guy to fight with, your own battles, not be fighting your mother's battles. And this is an ongoing process. Just getting an awareness in one weekend seminar doesn't do it. It's very, very deep and hard to turn around. But then I saw that once individuated and separated, what was the next life task for people? And that is to find their own loved one and their own guy to fight, not their dad, but someone else. And so the next issue would be about mating and sexuality and sensuality, which comes a lot to your work that I've loved and admired listening to you for so long. But that then created the book Hot and Heavy, How to Find Your Soul Through Eating or Sex. And it deals a lot with sensuality, about the how of how we take on any entry through any orifice, you see, the relationship. And that also did quite well, and I also do workshops just on sensuality and overeating and sexuality. And then I saw, and this was a lot involved with travels to India and volunteering in Burma, which are all mentioned in the book, that came then to writing From Bagels to Buddha about then, after all of this work on the planet, how do we go to God? How do we surrender to the spiritual path? And ultimately, to keep lost weight off, we have to develop more of a spiritual consciousness. And really what that means is self-acceptance. We have to develop more appreciation for being a fallible human being, trying our best, which, of course, is what the weight loss game is always about. It's not about competition and goals and setting limits and all this fitness trainer kind of talk. It's more about, ooh, I need comforting. Obviously, I've been getting excess comforting from food, and I need to find other ways to get that comforting. So it changes who you are as a person, how you walk the planet more gently. And this is a lot of what I deal with in From Bagels to Buddha, and it's actually my own surrender process. I start out in a Buddhist monastery, arguing with the monks about the rules and how they should change things, because I know better because I'm a therapist. And, you know, just it's pretty funny. It's a funny book, and I go from there to being in in these massage parlors and sweat steam baths on the Lower East Side, the Russian baths, and then to sweat lodges in New Mexico with grandmother Little Moon, and eventually to India and Burma, and having to surrender to my own dark side. You know, that's another thing. Everybody, we think if we need comforting, then, okay, it's all sweetness and light, and we never have to look at things about ourselves that we don't like. But ultimately, to fully, truly get a new relationship with food, we have to accept that we've made mistakes and there are things about ourselves we don't like. We can't run away from them. So in a nutshell, quickly, a nutshell for what Bagels to Buddha is about is it would be about Bridget Jones and Carrie Bradshaw sit down to eat, pray, love, and sip 3 cups of tea. So that's kind of what the book is about.
Why three cups of tea?
Well, because there was a very famous book out recently called 3 Cups of Tea, where Greg
Mortensen talked
about building schools in, I believe it was Afghanistan.
India or Afghanistan, somewhere, yeah.
I think it was in Afghanistan. So that's kind of, you know, just to tell other books that it's like. It's like Eat, Pray, Love a lot, a book that I loved.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you had quite an adventure. I mean, all those sort of that whole spiritual journey. And actually, if you look at the history of writing your books, you know, doing your own sort of developmental work, you know, through your interior work, working on sort of the developmental stages of your sort of self-analysis,
yeah,
of working on your individuation and separation stages, and then working on your sexuality and, you know, really moving through all that work. You've really sort of, you know, done that in a very public and helpful way. I mean, your books have been very well received and very helpful. You know, they're clinically, I think, very astute, but you also are very sensitive in the way that you write them, and you sort of out yourself. So there's a lot of transparency, which I think is
appreciated
too.
Well, you know, because I am a fellow sufferer, I am a wounded healer myself, and I do not have a perfect relationship with food. You know, even after like 37 years of doing this, I still have good days and bad days, and I have to constantly surrender to that relationship. And I also, when I had treatment centers, I would always tell the counselors, we're not going to ask these patients to do anything we're not willing to do. So we have to show that we've walked there. That's the great thing that 12 steps programs give to people, is that you can, you know, a professional can tell a person what to do, but it's so great if there's someone just a little ahead of you who says, this is how I do it, and this is how I came through it, and this is what I found difficult. And, God, that's so healing for people. It really is. So I don't tell anyone to do anything I haven't done.
So who are you hoping that this book will reach? I mean, all of us listening on the call, Imago Therapists, are you know, seeing couples. How do you hope that this book might help therapists or people in a relationship?
Okay, well, first of all, one of the vignettes that I talk about in this particular book, and I talk a lot about the different TV shows I've been on Oprah and Sally and Maury and things that happened, and being sabotaged by producers and things, which I think you've experienced as well. But there was one Maury Povich show where, you know, they flew me to New York, and I'm in the green room and getting makeup, and then the lady says, oh, by the way, we have a – and this gal that I'm going to be doing an intervention with has been vomiting and can't stop and gaining weight. And it's all planned, and the producer comes in and says, by the way, we're flying down her fiance, her boyfriend, and he's going to propose to her from the audience with a ring and a bouquet of flowers, and it's going to be so good for our ratings, you see? And I said, oh, my God, you know? So I sucked it up. I said, I'll do the best I can on this show. And so we go out there, and this woman is in a real bad condition, and then they say, oh, look what happened. And the guy runs up, and he's on one knee, and the music comes up. It's the end of the show, and everybody's applauding. And unfortunately, Maury turns to me, and he says, so what do you think, Judy? And I said, well, Maury, I said, anybody who marries a woman in this condition doesn't know what he's getting. I said, because when she stops this vomiting, a whole different person's going to show up, and it's best that they hold off until. So, boom, then the fade to black, the show's over. So what I'm trying to say is, if you're living with somebody in a couple relationship where that person is binging and vomiting, or just even binging and gaining weight and feeling bad about themselves, you've just got to know that when that person starts getting it together in their relationship with food, their relationship with you is going to change as well. And that's why fat is a family affair, is let's look at what it looks like after we remove the food from the equation. Nobody ever talks about fat. In fact, I've sent the book on to Michelle Obama saying, yes, childhood obesity, yes, let's get moving. But can we look at the underlying things that we also have to start addressing in the early days, not after when I get thin, but you know, when you get started is when you start looking at these things, or else you get too afraid as you approach getting thin, which I did, you know. Sexually, every time I would get to a certain number on the scale, I'd get scared to death and run away and all of these things that we do. And it's not always because of incest. You know, there was a big thing a few years ago in treatment. Everybody became an incest survivor. And then when you'd ask people, what do you mean by that? It wasn't always the horrific stories we imagined. And we had to ask people, get more specific. What are you talking about? And, you know, that isn't the only reason that people are avoiding sex. They're avoiding the intimacy of it and the vulnerability. And they don't want to go there, even if they haven't been horrifically violated, you know? And so for those of us who are overeaters, we say, you know, I don't need you. I don't need anybody. I just need my food. And this becomes our most intimate relationship. It serves all of our needs. And we don't even have to shower. You know, we like it. And those are the kind of things that we have to deal with in recovery. And that's constantly what I'm writing about and helping people with.
And what do you think of the link between, you know, binging or purging or compulsive overeating and sort of the brain chemical response? Do you think that there's an actual addiction to it, or do you come from a, just sort of an emotional attachment to it?
No, I'm absolutely.
What do you think about that?
Well, you know, one thing that I wrote in the book is that genetics loads the gun and environment pulls the trigger. But many of us do have an addictive relationship with the substance, refined carbohydrates. It's getting worse and worse. We have a nation that's full of this addiction. In fact, you know, when I lecture at treatment centers, you find a lot of women especially got into their drug abuse to control their eating behavior. And then that vicious cycle happened. They get treated for their alcohol and drug abuse. And then all of a sudden they see that food was the primary thing. But I do definitely believe in the addictive quality, not just because that's what's true for me, but I've seen it over time. Now, the reason people don't want to even address that is they are afraid, oh, my God, I can't ever have a bagel again. Yes, you can, but you've got to know, as I know, that sometimes these things create an addictive reaction for me. And what it means is that the next day I might feel a little out of sorts and I might be shaky and whatever my particular withdrawals look like. That doesn't mean I don't do it. See, that's the problem. A lot of people went to Overeaters Anonymous and they thought, well, that means never again. It's easier if you do never again, but it's just not realistic in my opinion. So I am a flexitarian, and I try for my patients to suggest the same thing, is how can we realize that we have this illness but not make it dominate our whole lives? So, and there, you know, most of the studies now are showing there's a lot of brain chemistry change when we take in sugar and refined carbohydrates, for sure.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And in a relationship, you know, if one person has this chronic food obsession and they go back and forth, and, you know, certainly this is what I see in my couples, and one person begins to change, you know, it's sort of the classic addiction process. One person will start to lose weight and the other person will start to sabotage them.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, they'll take out the bagels or whatever.
Yeah. In fact, in Fat is a Family Affair, I showed a lot of studies there where the husbands who were trying to help their wives lose weight were 18 times more likely to push something fattening in front of the wife than she would do it in return. Supposedly, she was the food-obsessed person, but it was the husbands who were just very subtly, you know. And when they asked husbands what they anticipated would be the result of their wife's weight loss, they said loss of a shared eating companion, loss of an bargaining position in fights, like, you fat slob, what do you know? And they were afraid of loss of their wife due to infidelity or divorce. All loss, 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 loss. And then these were the guys that women were coming in and saying, my husband's going to help me lose weight, and he's going to weigh me in every week. I said, pass, no, not. mates can't help one another. That's, again, why I so strongly recommend going to Overeaters Anonymous, to have somebody outside the family to be a coach and helper. Not the family, not the family. It's too close. And like you say, then when sabotage time comes, then your greatest helper is going to be the one that needs, they can't help it, but they're going to want to see you back in the old system, homeostasis. It's more comfortable, more natural, more what they're used to.
Right.
So there
and
you
that
are.
That fear of, if you lose weight, then you're going to leave me. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, and the women have it too, which I talked about a lot in Hot and Heavy, is women are afraid they're going to go raging and pillaging through the streets, you know? That really, when the women stop eating, some of my patients have had to masturbate 5 and 6 times a day, and they realize that it's not the food that they're after, it's just calming down that electric charge that they have going, and they never experience themselves sexually that way until they stopped eating compulsively. So, you know, all of a sudden, and this was around the time of the women's movement, all of a sudden the women were standing up saying, I'm not eating sugar, I want to have sex, and the husbands were getting headaches. You know, it was a total role reversal. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, I definitely see that as well.
Don't you?
Libido dramatically increases, and then sometimes they go back to overeating because they feel like, you know, I'm going to leave my husband if I lose weight or if I stop eating, and it's a way to keep you down
plus,
on the farm, so to speak.
Yes, and plus the rejection factor. You know, the idea of a man being his advances being rejected by a woman. Well, we're kind of used to that, but what if you're becoming a sexy woman and the guy doesn't want to be involved with you? We don't have any coping mechanisms for that. Nobody talks about that. Rarely.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Haven't you found that you have a lot of women who are quite sexual and their husbands aren't as much?
Oh, it's quite common. I think Michelle Wiener Davis writes about that, like the sex-starved wife, you know, that it's a very isolating experience because women are afraid to talk about it because for exactly the reason that you say, because, you know, most of their girlfriends are talking about, oh, my husband always wants to have sex and he's always chasing me around, and they're sitting in the corner going, yeah, gee, I don't really have that.
Exactly.
That's for them. Yeah.
That's right. So, you know, those are some other things people do address in Overeaters Anonymous in their meetings or else if they come to workshops, and, you know, you get to talk about those forbidden fruits.
And so your book, The Bagels of Buddha, you're talking about permanent weight loss that really has nothing to do with diet or exercise, and that there's some deeper changes that have to happen, and that you really move people out of this deeper sort of more rigid forms of control around food, and you're integrating some sort of spiritual changes. Are those from 12-step groups like OA, or are they more from sort of the psychotherapy model, or from, I know you talk about yoga and Buddhism, and can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, the easiest thing to say is all of the above, you know.
Okay.
Yes, it's about the process of surrender. So different people can find their avenue of surrender in different ways. A lot of the book is peppered with Buddhist ideas and yoga and Hindu ideas and 12-step ideas and, of course, psychotherapy. I've been a therapist for 40 years, so it's hard to delineate where what comes from. But the main thing is about giving up control, whereas you see when you teach people control your food, you're feeding into that part of their personality that needs to let go. So it's about, you know, just kind of starting out slowly, like one of the fights I was having with the monk about how I can't do this and I can't do that and I'm impossible. And he said, well, in Buddhism we suggest begin at once and do your best. Ah.
Hmm.
Oh.
Say that again? Can you just repeat that?
Sure. Begin at once and do your best. That's all. Anybody can begin at once and do your best. And that's just so relaxing. So it's kind of like ease into it. You know, I've been 37 years at my weight loss, you know, and if I have a bad day, it's just gently get back on the horse. No big deal. No punitive measures. Just back on the horse and we'll get down the road. So it's surrender to the fact that I have this lifelong chronic illness, that I do have an unnatural relationship to carbohydrates, and that I do have to deal with my food differently than other people. For example, in terms of satiety, most people, there's a 20-minute window from when your apostat tells you you're full till your brain gets the message and you feel full. In my case, it's a lot longer than that. So it's going to be at least an hour after a meal when I finally feel like I hit bottom, like, oh, okay, that was satisfying. But if I'm going to try to eat until I feel satisfied, I'm going to, you know, consume a side of beef because I like to eat. So having to accept that, okay, I have to leave this meal now, and it's not going to feel, you know, satisfied, but it will in a few more minutes. And I just have to learn, you see, we have to learn all those kind of things about how our organism operates.
So part of the book is also about sort of being mindful of what's happening in your own body and really getting in touch with yourself.
Yes, to thine own self be true. And just pay attention. And you see, and it's like what, you know, the people get the idea through these things I go through in the monasteries and stuff about you want to have some discipline because the discipline provides a structure for you. But you don't want to be punitive with yourself if you don't meet the measure. But you can't be just totally willy-nilly. Like if I just let myself never think about food, I'm going to tend to gain weight pretty quickly. That's just how it is for me. So I have to be mindful on a daily basis. I look at my activity level and I look at what kind of emotional things I'm going to be handling. If I'm going to be doing this teleseminar with you and I want to help all my faculties about me. And all those things make a difference in how I'm going to eat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that makes a lot of sense. So you're very conscious of what you're going to be doing. You're sort of more conscious of what your surroundings are. You're more conscious of what you're going to be feeling. And
yeah, it's sort of like,
No, go ahead.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, the examined life. You have to live a slightly more examined life. I have to live differently than other people. And I really don't mind it because it actually creates me being a more sensitized person, a more aware, more present, more in the now. So all kinds of good has come from that, but I've had to accept that I have to live differently.
Mm-hmm.
So what
and
are you going to say?
I was just going to say, so for therapists, you know, you talk about therapists typically do not get this honest about the inner thought process one undergoes when confronted with ideas or suggestions one doesn't want to follow.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if you could just say a little bit more about what you mean by that.
Well, one phrase I really like is the truth.
And I just want to ask you, is that your background noise?
No.
Or someone else?
No, there's some dog somewhere.
Somebody has background noise going on, if you could hit your *6, then we don't have to listen to the kids or the dog or whatever's going on in the background. So anybody who's listening.
All guests are now muted.
That will put you on mute, and that means you can hear us, but we can't hear you, and that'll give us a clear recording.
Ah, it got better. Thank you. That's great.
Yes.
I've just muted everyone,
okay.
Tammy, so just let me know when you'd like me to
talk.
Oh,
thank you. Great. Thanks.
Thank you, Chad.
Okay. One phrase that I really like is, you know, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. The truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. And so as a therapist, I'm supportive of people. I understand how hard it is, but I also tell them, and I think you're this kind of a therapist too, I also tell them, hey, here's the deal. You know, I don't want to waste your money for years and years in therapy. If you're not willing to experience some discomfort in looking at yourself, you're not going to make it. You can't just always feel comforted and supported. In fact, right in the beginning of the book, I don't know if it's there on your copy. I don't even have a copy yet. But right on the first fly page, there's a quote from St. Teresa of Lisieux. Do you have that? And it's something like, once you have... Oh, you don't have it. Oh, man. I don't want to go through the computer now. It'll be distracting. But it's something like, once you have become willing to endure feeling displeasure with yourself, then you become a safe haven for others. In other words, once you've faced your dark side, then you welcome anybody. You don't judge yourself or anybody else, you know, and that makes you a safe haven. So it actually makes you a better therapist if you can show that you also have these foibles, that you also struggle with these things. And I know you do, because you're just fabulous in the way you share that with people. So some therapists thought they would become therapists to look good. Not good. Not a best idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you really are talking about sort of being transparent about your own work and your own struggles and confronting your own stuff.
Yeah, but within reason. You know, I don't want to, you know, the session is not about my full self-disclosure at all. It's choosing when and how the therapist discloses for the value of the patient. It's not my place to have my therapy. So, you know, those are the kind of things that you get nuanced through in your training and supervision. You know, that's the thing that I help counselors learn about, is when would it be appropriate and when not. And that's something that people get from a therapist that they don't get from Overeaters Anonymous, to tell you the truth. At OA, people just share their own experience, and, you know, you're there to listen and take in what you want and leave the rest. And the people who are talking don't have any training in when do I cross the line? You know, when is it appropriate? When is it about me, and when does it need to be about you? You know? Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, Judy, if you could say a little bit more about Overeaters Anonymous for therapists that are listening that may not be familiar with it. You know, most therapists are familiar with most 12-step groups and how they work, and they've certainly heard of OA, but for people that may want to today refer someone to OA and give them a little more information, maybe you could give them sort of the distinction between OA and AA and how it's different, how it might help.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to just give a little caveat, and that is that there are a lot of bad meetings. So, you know, OA has changed a lot. So I'll say that at first. If your patient goes to a meeting and says, I hated it, and first of all, part of the reason that they hated it is they don't want to be a member of any club that would have them as a member. So, you know, they're rejecting the group because they identify too closely. But I ask people to go to at least 5 or 6 meetings. Also, in Fat is a Family Affair, I outline what all of the different rejections of OA are, the different reasons that people would give why they don't want to go, and I help massage people through those reasons. And by the way, all these books are available at my webpage, judyhollis.com, but and also on Amazon. However, what do I want to say? You have to, that's mostly the work that I do with people, is helping them make OA work for them. I think that the best idea for your therapist in their offices is to say, not all medicine tastes good. You know, it's not about liking the group or liking the people. You just want to go there and suck them dry. Take it in, chew them up, spit them out. You don't have to talk to anybody. You don't have to like anything. just gather those words of wisdom that will help you stay on your path. So that's one thing. Disavow them of the idea that they're supposed to like the meetings and it's supposed to be fun and fellowship. Not necessarily. Sometimes people make friends, but I've actually been helped a lot more by people I never made friends with, you know? Because a lot of overeaters were manipulative and we'll make friends with people, and in 2 seconds, instead of them helping us, we're helping them, you know? And then we move into our performance personality, winning friends and influencing people. And that's not good for attending OA. It's better to attend OA with a drool. I say, go in there drooling, no makeup, just hang out in the back of the room, you know? That's what I did. You know, I thought the ladies' muumuus weren't as nice as mine. Mine had flowers on it. But we were wearing the same kind of flip-flops, you know, and couldn't get those shoes on. So it's go there and try to identify where the commonalities are rather than where the differences are. Now, in terms of similarities and differences with AA, I give a big lecture on this too at a number of treatment centers. But you know, the overeater thing we have to deal with every day, meal by meal. So it, like we were talking about earlier about living a conscious existence, we have to be very conscious. And one of the things said is that failing to plan is planning to fail. So that each day I wake up and I have some idea of how I'm going to eat that day. And in AA, they don't have to do that. They don't have to get up and worry, how am I going to mix my drinks today, you know? Sending overeaters to a nutritionist is like sending an alcoholic to a bartender. You know, what is that about? Yes, we already know what to eat. We already know what to eat. We need, we need help in how, we need people we need to call during that, you know. Most obsessions last about 15 minutes. We need someone we can call in that 15 minutes and say, talk me down from this, you know? I have to stay honest with what I'm eating. But, oh, that's the worst thing, is usually in the beginning we ask you to have a food sponsor where you tell this person on a daily basis what you ate that day. Oh, my God, people hate that more than anything. I'd much rather tell you about my sex life than tell you what was in my plate. You know, and it's about being rigorously honest with another human being. So it's hard. The best thing I can say is we know how hard it is. But also, the first line of my first book, Fat is a Family Affair, the first line was, we're as fat as we are dishonest. We're as fat as we are dishonest. So that doesn't mean that we're liars. It means that we may not be living the life that's true for us, and that we may have to back off from our big shotism or whatever we're doing to live the wrong life and slow it down, ratchet it down to be authentic. And that's a lot of what I propose in From Bagels to Buddha, is just becoming a worker amongst workers, doing C-plus work, just living a life.
That's a good message. Is there anything else, Judy, that you want to let people know before we open it up for questions or comments?
Well, sure. I do give consultations on the telephone a lot. People call me from all over the world, and we talk for 15 minutes or for a full hour. I schedule an hour, but some people only talk 15 minutes, and they're only billed for the 15 minutes. I also twice a year do a 12-week teleseminar, and I'll be doing the next one the week before Thanksgiving to take us through the holidays. And we go over the I had a 12-tape lecture series with the Hazelden Corporation. It was one of their big sellers for many years. So people will get those CDs and listen to them, and then we will see how they apply to them. And they talk about surrender and about the disease concept and about the family dynamics and assertiveness training and sexuality and intimacy. And whatever comes up during a 12-week weight loss program, because for most people, we do want them to also lose weight while they're gaining this insight. So we help people stay on through the holiday season, which is a very, very big deal to do. Also, if people go to my webpage, I just did a TV show last week. It'll be in the section of the webpage called Media. And the webpage is judyhollis.com. And if they sign up, I'm going to be offering a lot of free CDs and other things that people can avail themselves of. So that's my little advertising spiel there, and I'd love to go for questions.
Okay. And can you just give people, maybe Jared, you could take us off of moderator mode so that we can...
All guests are now muted.
Oh, and by the way, the phone number to get me is 1-800-8-ENOUGH. It's 800, the number 8.
All guests are now unmuted.
8-ENOUGH.
That's great. That's a great number. And then can you give people your website again as well?
Sure. It's just my name, judyhollis.com. And they can spell it with an I or a Y, J-U-D-I, J-U-D-Y, either way, judyhollis.com. And also the teleseminar program is called Super Slim for Good, and that has two meanings, super slim for the rest of your life, but it also means that we do good works. We take on good behaviors that make us feel good about ourselves so we stop punishing ourselves with food. You know, we got our wires mixed up between nurturance and punishment, and many of us are using food to punish ourselves instead of to get the nurturance we need. So all of that gets addressed in those teleseminars.
Good. Perfect. I think we're off of moderator mode, so if anyone would like to ask Judy a question or has a comment, just say your name, and now is your time.
Well, they're not there listening.
Right.
Or they just don't want to ask a question.
Yes, unless people are shy.
Well, I wonder what happened to the poor woman with the crying baby. You know, I had a group. By the way, I'll be in New York this summer. If any New Yorkers want to call for appointments, I'll be doing them in New York City. But when I lived in New York full-time, I had a group for Hasidic ladies. And boy, did they have a lot of hardships with all those children. This lady with the crying baby made me think of it. But here they were trying to maintain a spiritual program and a weight loss program, and some of them had 10 and 11 kids. It's not easy.
Yeah, so for people that have young children, are there something that you recommend in general or any advice that you could give? You know, for those of us who work with couples that have young children, it might be particularly challenging.
Well, of course, if we have the couple, we like to ask the man to take over more, which a lot of young couples are doing. But you've got to think of that idea of the oxygen mask in the airplane, that even though the mother wants to be, sorry, I got to sneeze. Excuse me. Even though the mother wants, thank you. Wants to be a good mother, that she has to find some way to take care of herself in all that process. And even if it means getting up early to meditate or getting to the meeting that she needs to get to, that it is worth hiring babysitters to get herself her treatment program also. And then the baby will benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. I just saw a report that was released this week. I don't know if it was CNN or New York Times, that said that they've done a study, a pretty longitudinal study on childhood obesity, and that the increase in obesity in kids may also be linked to the incredible increase in C-sections, that the babies that have been born by C-section have a tendency to be the babies that are overweight or obese by the age of three. and that there's something about the brain chemistry and the connection with the mom and something about the all that stuff that happens very early on that may there may be some chemical connection as well, which I thought was kind of interesting. When we talk about early attachment, I don't know about the brain chemistry and who else knows what's going on in that sort of magical birth time, but I thought it was fascinating, actually.
Sure, and most of those women tend to not be breastfeeders as well. And they're finding that breastfeeding is helpful in not creating obesity. And all of these things, you know, and if you think about it, it's about getting back to natural in so many ways. You know, people say, I can't do this food plan. All that we're asking you to do is get back to natural foods instead of processed. In fact, I tell people the greatest thing you can do for yourself is avoid cellophane. Just avoid cellophane. Do not eat... Right? Just do not eat anything that you have to rip open a bag for. And that will change your whole life. And natural childbirth, natural breastfeeding, you know, not being so big modern technology oriented, but back to basics. And hopefully that can help our obesity struggles. I sure hope.
Yeah,
actually,
sure
also, people might want to know that I have a video blog that posts twice a week, and I go over a lot of things like you just did. I go over a lot of the recent research in eating disorders and obesity, and I give my comments on them. Right now, what we're putting up are a trip I took to Italy last year of how you can make it through Italy without gaining weight. but just today again, before I leave on the trip to New York, we're going to be taping some more of the blogs about recent research in the field, like what you just shared.
Yeah, oh, that's brilliant. Good. Yeah. Good. Well, Judy, can you give us one more time the ways that people can find you and find your books and, you know, sometimes in... With topics like this, sometimes people like to contact you directly to ask more personal questions because it's sometimes difficult to ask things on in a public forum,
Okay. Well, they can telephone 1-800-8-ENOUGH. That's 800-8 ENOUGH. The number 8 ENOUGH, like we ate enough. And then my webpage is my name, judyhollis.com. judyhollis.com. And be sure to sign up so that I can send you some new updates and email me or call me and we'll talk.
Perfect. Well, Judy, thank you so much for being here today. I really think your work is original and empowering, not only for women but for couples. And I think you say things that need to be said and that your honesty and, you're very down to earth and accessible and your transparency and the way that you're just very generous about the work that you do and how you want to help people. I think that's really valuable and I really honor what you're doing. And I'm looking forward to the new book coming out, Judy Hollis's new book, From Bagels to Buddha, How I Found My Soul and Lost My Fat, is available starting June 1st. But you can get it by pre-order on Amazon.com or you can get it at her website. So I would encourage everyone who's listening to this on a recording, if you're not here live, or if you want to contact Judy to do it directly. And again, it's Judy Hollis, H-O-L-L-I-S. And for more information, you can contact her through her website, or again, one last time, pre-order her new book, From Bagels to Buddha, on Amazon. And it's released brand new June 1st. So thanks, Judy, so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tammy. Look forward to seeing you when I get east.
Yeah, call me when you get to New York.
Okay.
All right, thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.